Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
By Seth Small. Is down. It is up. And the Fighting Texas Aggies take down the top-ranked Tide, 41-38. Number one goes down. The celebration is on at Kyle Field.
Andrew.
Happy birthday, Jimbo Fisher.
I've got Zach Calzada, our quarterback, right here. What made you want to get back in the football game after you got hurt?
Well, we had to win the game. It was no question. We had to win the game.
What does it say about the heart of this team?
Well, you just saw it. You just saw the heart of this team. It's ridiculous. This team fought. This team fought. I'm so proud of them. The O-line, best game they played. Best game against Alabama. Best game the O-line played. Our receivers made plays. Our defense stepped up. Let's go.
Go celebrate with them. Congratulations.
Fighting Texas Aggie broadcast. Andrew Monaco on the call. A sideline guy jumped in there pretty quick there, huh? I wouldn't have been too pleased with that if I was Monaco. But the Aggies beating the number one team in the nation at a sold-out Kyle Field in College Station on Saturday. Look, I'm not an Aggie supporter, but I was pretty happy for my Aggie friends that they were able to beat number one Bama and pull that upset.
You know, it's kind of like when we talk about Dusty, but more so in the fact that he hasn't as many slip-ups. I like Jimbo Fisher. I like when he comes on the air with John and Lance, and, you know, he's an auctioneer that with as quick as he talks, but he seems like a good old dude that just, you know, that's done a lot of things, and you want him to live up to this contract and do the things for the Aggs. And we talked about his struggles at quarterback. Well, I can tell you this. Calzada was impressive. He was tough. He made big throws. It didn't look like the moment was ever too big for him. And that, to me, said more about who should be the quarterback of this team going, not only just for the rest of the season, and I don't care who he recruits, he should be knee-deep in any competition, because he proved to you against the number one team in the nation that he wasn't going to back down, and that was impressive. The fact that you had two running backs that were getting you yardage to keep them, in terms of balance, they could get some running to go with the passing when they got chunk plays. And more so than anything else, what was very gratifying, and I'm with you, my Aggie friends that were happy, I was happy for them. And I don't have a fighting interest in the Horns or the Aggs. But when I looked at it, to have Bill O'Brien come back to this state, to have him come dangerously close to Houston, Texas, where he should never step foot again, and to have him, Bill O'Brien, and go away from a horse of a running back, and inside the five, I think it was, throw the ball every single time, going, Bill, you deserve every bit of that.
Yeah, the play calling down the stretch, especially once they got in that goal-to-go situation, was pretty odd for Alabama. I thought Jimbo Fisher handled Calzada perfectly, kind of how Tim Kelly handled Davis Mills a little bit, where he made it simple on them. They were able to ride the running backs in Spiller and A-Chain. I thought it was a great game plan. What did you think of the call? We got to grade the call, as we do on the Killer Bees. Andrew Monaco getting the victory over number one Alabama.
I know Andrew Monaco from a long time ago, from his days in the NBA in Orlando. I thought it was good. I thought it was good. It was no Dave South.
1 to 10.
7.5.
I thought the Monaco part was great. The sideline guy jumping in like that. I would have shot him. I would have shot the guy on the spot.
He ruined it.
Yeah, he ruined it. Here's the Alabama call.
What'd you give it?
I give Monaco's part of it like a 7. Overall, I give it like a 4.5.
I give it a 7.
Because the sideline guy was jumping all over him. I didn't like
Dave
that part
South
of it.
Dave South says we beat Alabama. We did it. We did it.
Otherwise. Dave South would be like, that is a win. There goes the man. That's a victory for the Fighting Texas Aggies.
You wouldn't have mentioned any names. For most of the game, you wouldn't have known who did what. But at the end, you'd have known that we did it.
That team beat that team, and
Dave
we did
South
it.
Says the Texas Aggies have won. They've beat Alabama. They beat that team with that coach.
All right, here's the 30, the 20, the 10, touchdown. John Granado, right here on ESPN 97.5.
John Granado?
Football.
the home for fighting Texas.
Whether he was doing basketball or football, we give people a hard time with the we's and the us's and things. But, like, I know late in his career, Milo was really tough to follow.
Yeah.
At, you know, what was happening with the ball. Dave South was impossible. Like, he would just be like, oh, we didn't get that call. It was on the floor, and there were three hands around it. Now look at the Aggies. They're going to lose. I don't know what happened. I'm like, Dave, you're not the only one. I don't know what happened either.
Fighting tech. There goes that man. Dell had a good stat on Twitter the other day. I was looking at Twitter as I was watching this game. Something with Brian Robinson, how he's averaging 6 yards per carry, and then O'Brien just ignored him down the stretch.
Wait. Yeah, I think at the time it might have been 6.7, and he wound up averaging 6.1 yards per carry. And in a goal-to-goal situation, as Joel talked about, didn't hand the ball off once. First and goal from the three, threw it three times, as opposed to, you know, giving it to the running back that's hot, because that's Bill being Bill, I guess.
Yeah. Stop trying to, you know what? Don't try and pull the wool over and be sneaky. You don't have to fool anybody. You got a guy that all you got to do is turn around and put it in his breadbasket. Pretty good chance with that offensive line. He's going to do what he needs to do.
Yeah, and A&M had been on the field, that defense, all game long. I think until their tying touchdown drive after Alabama took the lead, they had a success rate of zero on their plays. Not like, oh, a drive here had a success rate of zero. Their plays, every play, success rate of zero. That's how bad they were in that second half until the tying drive. And then they obviously got the field goal to win it, but that defense was exhausted, and he decided to let him off the hook by throwing the football three times.
Yeah, bizarre play calling. I like Bryce Young. I like Bryce Young a lot. I didn't think he had a great game in terms of, like, completion percentage. I still really like the kid.
I like his composure.
He's so calm.
Yeah.
He's so calm. I love the ability that he has to move around the pocket, but then he doesn't look to run. Like, he's not just, okay, there's my first read. It's not there. I'm taking off. He only scrambles when he has to scramble, and usually it's in times whenever he's still looking downfield and trying to find a receiver. I actually like that. About his game. Of course, he's not draft eligible until next season because he's just his second year in college football.
He's got that Yordan Alvarez ticker, though. It's good in football. It's not so good in baseball when you just can't – nothing excites you enough to go chase down a ball and really get fired up to go, you know, hustle play.
See, I don't see that, though, in his game. Like, I think he has, like, that facial demeanor and, like, that body language. But then if you watch the play, he does play with a sense of urgency, I feel.
You know, he's kind of like Jalen Hurts in a way. Jalen Hurts, I felt, had that a lot.
Yeah.
Where no matter what, the moment was never too big for him. Whether he succeeded or not remained to be seen. But it looked like he looks a lot like a skinnier Jalen Hurts in the fact that nothing comes at him and he's like, whoa.
In terms of demeanor, I would agree. Better arm than Jalen Hurts.
I'm not talking about their quarterback.
And look, I don't think Bryce Young like has the best fastball that you're going to see of NFL draft prospects, but I think he can make every throw. I think he's got good accuracy, and I think he can throw the deep ball, too. I would love for him to be the Texans quarterback. Problem is, he's not draft eligible until 2023. So we listened to the A&M call. Here's the Alabama call of them falling in College Station on Saturday night.
What happens?
Really, like, what happened?
You're not missing anything.
I know.
This is the call. This is what's going on.
But he said, what happens? We don't know!
You know, though.
Yeah, I'm saying it. When I'm listening to it live.
So Eli Gold goes with the silent treatment.
Works really well on radio.
As Texas A&M wins it.
The league is going to get themselves $250,000. Because everybody who does not have a seat and those who did have now flooded the field here at Kyle Field in College Station. The scoring drive, 8 plays.
So that's pretty much the gist of it there. Eli Gold going with the silent treatment, letting the crowd do the talking.
Jeremy.
I have takes for this call. I have takes from it.
Bring it, Eli Gold. Because my whole thing is you've always, if nothing else, you are there to paint the picture and be the eye.
But is the crowd not doing it in that moment?
No, I don't think that there was enough.
It needed something. It needed, like, it's good. And then if you want to get out of the way, get out of the way. But it did need some sort of resolution
there. There wasn't a crescendo of cheering. Yeah. It was consistent throughout. So you didn't know. I mean, he could have said, we're headed to overtime as much as he could have said whatever he wanted to at the end of that, the way he did it. Otherwise, no one and the people in their car would have believed him because they couldn't see it.
Great for TV.
Yes.
On the radio, he needed something. You have to have something there. I think the call was not very good. I'm giving it a 4. What I really didn't like about the call from Eli Gold, too, what's the first thing he says after the kick is up? They're going to be fine. Yeah. That's petty to me. It's petty. Like, you want to paint the picture
Alabama.
And say storm the field, that's great. But the fact that you're talking about the fine, petty to me. I thought Eli Gold did a very poor job on that that call.
I'll give it a three.
Yeah,
I hate that. I hate the fact that, you know, we always said, you know, we are here to paint the verbal picture for those that cannot see the game currently. And the fact that he did the exact opposite, and I hope he does television because then he's got an excuse because it's hard. You know, the challenge for Craig up until this year was to differentiate between a TV game and a radio game and change your delivery. And so then I would have given him the bit. If you say he doesn't, then I think that he needs a lot of work.
I struggle with TV awfully because I just don't do it very often. I do radio 99% of my broadcast. I struggle big time when it comes to TV. Oklahoma, Texas, absolutely bonkers at the Cotton Bowl. Texas gets off to the big lead. Oklahoma storms all the way back. And the Sooners telling the Longhorns that they're still their daddies there in the Big 12.
It's unfortunate because it looked like, especially it was an 18-point lead at halftime, and you're like, Longhorns are making an early statement. Sark is doing what no one thought that he would do this quickly. A lot of people didn't think he could do it all. Looks like they got the guy right. Looks like everything's going their way. It's going to help recruiting. It's going to do all these different things. And then the fourth quarter happened. And then wisely and very, very, I think had to be a difficult decision. But the fact that Lincoln Riley was able to pull the plug on Spencer Rattler and make the decision at quarterback was the game changer of the game. Now, he still brought Rattler in for the 2-point conversion,
which was bizarre.
And I don't know if he was doing that to save face in case there is some thought of using two quarterbacks
the rest of
the
way. I think it's just what they practiced. I think it's how they practice. If we have a 2-point conversion that we like, we're doing this play. And since Rattler practiced it all week and Caleb Williams didn't, I think that was why.
I think Rattler's probably have already filled out his papers for a transfer.
No way. He's going to the draft. I don't think he goes to another school.
I don't think if he goes to the draft, he's going to be so sadly disappointed in the fact that what was his draft status prior to the start of this season?
Like 1-1.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, people thought he was the end-all, be-all. We heard it when we were embracing the suck with people trying to do what was necessary to get Rattler or Spencer. I don't think that he's anything more than Davis Mills right now.
I think he's still a second-rounder if he comes out. Mm. And I'll be honest with you. I don't hate him as a prospect. Like, I know he's not had a good season. He still throws a really good ball. He's got a strong arm. He's pretty mobile. He's pretty fast. I think you can do something with Spencer Rattler. He's not coming in there day one to like be your starting quarterback, but I still think he has potential to play in the league.
I think he's got to prove it on that level, Jeremy, that he's able to lead a football team. Because you know what?
He came in
for a 2-point conversion, but everything you see and hear and read about says he wasn't exactly the ultimate team player. He wasn't sitting there trying to help his teammates on and do the kind of things like we're talking about with Tyrod Taylor, or talking about guys that are trying to really establish themselves as being good locker room teammates as well as good players. He needs to go somewhere else, get a second opportunity, show that not only can he lead on the field, but he can be that kind of teammate and he has those kind of characteristics, and then the NFL will take more notice. I think if he comes out after this season,
He'd be a project.
I think he's Davis Mills. I think he's a third-round pick. I
mean, maybe he's a third-rounder. He's somebody that would intrigue me as a third-rounder because I think he's very talented. I still think he has a high ceiling to play in the NFL. I don't think he'd be ready for day one whatsoever. Looking at the college football rankings that came out yesterday, some movement in the top 25 because you had Iowa beat Penn State.
Boy, that was a bad game.
Penn State lost their quarterback. That game is entirely different if that quarterback doesn't go down. They win by two possessions if their quarterback doesn't go down. I hated seeing that.
Completely agree.
Mostly because they had the Nittany Lions. But Georgia, the new nation's number one, clearing away the best team in college football. Iowa, how about Iowa at number two? Cincinnati is currently the number three team in the nation. Oklahoma 4, Alabama 5, and then rounding out the top 10, Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, Oregon, and Michigan State. How about that Big Ten bias? Look at all those Big Ten teams there in the top 10. Iowa at 2, Ohio State at 6, Penn State at 7, Michigan at 8, Michigan State at 10. Big Ten bias
country. Yeah, and I wonder why, too, because, you know, the committee with their ties to the Big Ten. And look, I'm a Big Ten guy. I'm here to tell you that they're doing what they're doing now because by the end of the season, a lot of it will weed itself out. Those teams are not very good. Iowa, as I said,
don't think there's anybody good outside of Georgia and Cincinnati and Bama.
That game was so awful to watch.
It was
hard
to watch.
And I said to you, Iowa never has good offense. They always have great defense because they have really tough, hard-nosed front seven type guys and a few corners here and there. That offense is atrocious. And Penn State, for as highly rated as they were coming into the season and they were going more, you know, opening it up West Coast style, they're going to change things and do things and really, you know, put a lot of points on the board. They haven't been impressive. Michigan State, look, they're playing who's on their schedule. Michigan should have lost to Nebraska. They were right there vulnerable, and Harbaugh was Harbaughing after the game, passing up post-game interviews, being the D-bag that he is because, you know, he was grouchy because, you know, everybody wanted the upset. You're on the road, big dog. That's what everybody's supposed to be wanting.
All right, I'm going to ask this to both of you, Dell and Joel. You have to put your lives in the hand of one Big Ten school to win against Georgia. Who is that Big Ten school that you're putting your lives in their hands?
Ohio State for me. Because no matter who their quarterback is, I know that they've got a bunch of NFL talent type players, five-star type recruits, and that regardless of what kind of quarterback play they get or how young he is, everybody else around him, and starting with their receivers and their backs and everything, I'm going to take Ohio State. If that's the only chance I get one team from the
Big
Ten.
Not Northwestern, huh?
No.
Illinois doesn't do it for you. What about you, Dale?
It's an easy one. Every other Big Ten team tries to play like Georgia, except they're just a knockoff version of them. The only team that has a differing style and has a talent level is Ohio State.
Yeah.
Ohio State's defense has gotten better since they quietly demoted their DC. I mean, they haven't done it outright, but he's no longer the one calling plays. He's just not. They're just not going to embarrass him in the middle of the year. They've gotten better defensively, and they just have the dudes. They recruit at almost the level that Georgia does, and they have a more dynamic offense. I think Georgia probably doesn't want to face him because, you know what? Can you trust Stetson Bennett or JT Daniels, depending on who's healthy, to match points? Like, Georgia going into yesterday or Saturday's game was giving up 4.6 points per game.
Their defense has carried them.
Auburn scored 10 and it's up their average a little bit. That's how good their defense has been. They haven't seen anyone like Ohio State, but then again, Ohio State has not seen a defense like Georgia. I would love to see that in a semifinal. It'd probably be a final because Georgia and Alabama might see. You know what? It probably would be a semifinal because they wouldn't want to have Georgia and Alabama play back-to-back because they're probably going to see each other in the SEC title game.
The better question is, take Ohio State out of the mix. You can only pick one. Who's the second-best team to end up in the Final Four? That's a better question.
Cincinnati.
In the Big Ten.
Oh, in the Big Ten.
I mean, I look at it and I say...
Look, it depends on Penn State's quarterback.
I was going to say, if Penn State's healthy, I really believe it's Penn State. Michigan isn't impressive. Again, their offense isn't what everybody, you know, was hoping that it is. It's not. Michigan State, I think, is doing it with smoke and mirrors right now, but, you know, good for them to get the program back on the map. But Iowa has no offense. I think Penn State's the second best team in the conference, but if they're not healthy, then nothing matters.
Yeah, you know, Iowa's created against teams that were either ranked or undefeated when they played them. That includes Indiana, Penn State, Iowa State, and Maryland. They've created 18 turnovers.
Wow.
In four games against their best competition. They force 18 turnovers. They always play on a short field, or their punter's so good, they were backing Penn State up. So even with the backup, he couldn't do anything. So they're getting the ball at the 45-yard line and in aggressive situations to score. I don't see that lasting, but it's lasted through 6 weeks. So I don't know when's that going to stop.
Yeah.
They have a schedule where they should run out. I mean, they should win out.
Yeah, they only have – there's no one really in front of them until they get to a Big Ten title game.
It'll be interesting to see Iowa. It'll be interesting to watch this race for the college football playoffs. How Cincinnati in the mix, too. I think that's something to pay attention to as well. 713-780-ESPN. Who are we overlooking in college football in terms of a contender to be in the college football playoff? 713-780-3776. When we come back, Ryan Tepera of the White Sox, he decided to accuse the Astros of stealing signs yesterday. We'll get into it next. The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Fitz Roofing. Look, Corey's my buddy. Corey's the owner of the company. Corey's also the vice president of the Houston Area Roofers Association. You don't get those kind of accolades and have that title unless you are trusted and you are knowledgeable in the field in which you work, and that is exactly what Corey is with Fitz Roofing. Whether you need a new roof on your business or your house, you got a leaky roof you need repaired, or maybe you just need some home repairs or a new fence in the yard, Fitz Roofing does all those kind of things and so much more. Check it out at FITZRoofing.com and see all the ways they can help you. Better yet, call them, 832-521-3001. They do a free, no-obligation inspection. It costs you absolutely nothing for them to come to you and tell you what they can do to help you. And then they go back and do the rest of their day. You want them to come back, schedule the appointment before, during, and after the entire process is complete. They're going to do everything in their power to make sure you are happy with great customer service, phenomenal products, including the best in the business, CertainTeed shingles, and the best ratings and the best warranties to boot. They take care of Houstonians because they want from word of mouth to word coming from me on this show that you're going to know that there's only one place to go when you're looking for anything fixed, repaired, or done right around your house. It's Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
ESPN 97.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It is what it is. They've obviously had a reputation of, you know, doing some sketchy stuff over there. And, you know, it's just, we can say that it's a little bit of a difference, you know. I think you saw the swings and misses tonight compared to, you know, the first two games of Minute Maid. But that's not really the story, you know. We come here to play. You know, we're going to compete. We're not going to worry about what they're going to do. All we have to do is execute pitches, and they can't hit them anyways.
How about that? Ryan Tepera gets in a game yesterday, a blowout game, and starts feeling himself a little bit. Houston's own Ryan Tepera was from Brazoswood.
That's not Houston.
Played his college ball at Sam Houston State, Bearcats. Dusty Baker, talking earlier today, was asked about Tepera's comments. He said, those are some heavy accusations. We're about the same runs, OPS, everything as we are. We're actually better on the road than we are at home. I think they're actually better at home than they are on the road. I don't have a much of a response other than I was listening to Eric Clapton this morning, and he had a song, Before You Accuse Me, You Need to Take a Look at Yourself. That's all I got to say. Baker's great in a press conference setting. He name drops more than anybody, by the way. I think he mentions Hank Aaron once a week. I was listening to a Dusty presser last week, and he mentioned when he used to play with Tommy John. Like, he drops, like, the biggest names. It's hilarious.
I think people forget. It's kind of like Calvin Murphy. They think about him with the loud suits being on Rockets telecast. They don't realize he's a Hall of Famer, you know, that did a ton of stuff in his NBA career that most people would never even know because he did it way back in the day.
Yep.
But that's exactly why when you hear from Dusty, we talk about it. Like, even the fact that, you know, the fact that these two managers tried to soft sell the fact that there was bad blood between the two of them. And then the first chance La Russa got, he basically was saying, that's why I'm already a Hall of Fame manager, and implying that Dusty's got work to do. You know what? You forget Dusty as a player won a World Series and was a hell of a player for the Dodgers.
Dusty was a really good baseball player.
Yep.
I mean, you look at the numbers. He was really good, had a long tenure in Major League Baseball as a player. La Russa's just a snake. Like, you can't believe anything La Russa says. I got into a Tony La Russa wormhole over the weekend and just watched, like, old YouTube videos on the guy. Like, the dude yells at reporters every other year, whether it's in Oakland, whether it's in St. Louis, whether it's in Chicago. Like, he just berates reporters for asking fair questions or whenever they're critical of his team. He lies through his teeth saying one thing about Dusty Baker, and then he'll do something else on the field. I just don't like the dude.
I don't either.
He's been a snake for as long as he's been. There was another instance whenever he was a consultant for Arizona, whenever he was a consultant with the Diamondbacks, and the Pirates said something about how La Russa's teams always, like, retaliate. La Russa was waiting for the broadcasters as soon as they went off the air outside of their press box door. He's super sensitive. And, like, the comments he made yesterday or after the game yesterday about Grindahl, he didn't do that. He didn't do that at all. When you know damn well, whenever they're in the locker room and in the clubhouse, he's telling them to do all these dirty things.
Well, and you know what? The thing is, he's kind of like the baseball equivalent, and not surprising that he was friends with guys like Bill Parcells. But he's basically Nick Saban and Bill Belichick in baseball. It's like, I'm good as long as we're good. And the minute that we're not, or that you're starting to take shots at me, well, then I'm going to be that guy that when backed into a corner or rubbed the wrong way, I'm going to come out like over the top coming back at you because I can, because I am Tony La Russa, or I am Nick Saban, or I am, you know what? It's annoying as hell. And I don't want to be your Dusty Baker. But you know what? In all the years that I hung out with Charles Barkley and the people that he brought our way, one night he brought Mark McGwire and their hitting coach named Barry something or other that was there. It was one of their coaches or trainers. He'd been there for a long time, and he was tight. And La Russa. I could not want to get away quicker from anyone than the ego that was Tony La Russa with the wine drink. He was drinking his wine, and he was smarter and better than everybody at the table. And I was just like, God, this dude is just too much for me, man.
Yeah, he comes across smug. He's a snake. And suddenly this series has a little bit of bitterness between the two teams, has a little bit of chippiness. Bregman was asked about Tepera's comments earlier today. He said they got really good pitchers. They executed pitches and held us to six runs yesterday. Like, yeah they must be awful hitters all of a sudden that they're in Chicago and scoring six runs off of what your bullpen, like the best your bullpen had to offer.
Tepera's trying to do his best Jay Glazer. Like, let me try and put my name on the map to get more clicks. But by the way, who knew who this guy was until he started running his mouth?
Dusty didn't until the series.
Game? See, but that's the thing. And then after last night's performance, but here's the other thing that he forgets when he said that they had it their way. They scored six runs last night. They scored six runs in game one. So, you know what? The runs are the same there, too. You know what? It's a night game, colder weather. Everybody can say whatever they want. But you did what you were supposed to do all series in game three as a team. Slow your roll.
Between the comments there by Tapera, between Tim Anderson yelling at Ryan Stanek after he got slider, which, by the way, if this series goes five, and hopefully it doesn't, but if you're in the ballpark in a game five at Minute Maid Park and you're behind the Chicago White Sox dugout, you should just yell slider at Tim Anderson for the entire duration of the game. Slider, nonstop to Tim Anderson. Hopefully it doesn't go to game five. We don't have to worry about it after game four. But the simmering tension between La Russa and Baker, now you have Anderson yelling at Stanek from the dugout. What we saw yesterday with Grandal, these comments from Tapera after the game. I think tomorrow has a chance to be really interesting. Like, I don't think you're going to see anybody throw at anybody in a close game. Not in a close game. Like, there's too much on the line. Like,
maybe not hit him, but send messages.
Oh, I think you're probably going to get some chin music. Yep. I think you're going to have some message pitches. I think you might see some hard slides. I mean, yeah, I think you're going to see that. I don't think you're going to intentionally hit anybody in a close game. Now, maybe if it gets out of hand late, you might see it. But suddenly this series has got some serious tension between the two sides.
I watch what happens at first base, too, right? I watch when Abreu's at first and some of our players get to first base, there's conversation, there's laughs.
It looks friendly.
There's smiles.
Yeah.
Tim Anderson gets to first base, and you can see him look at Yuli and be, what's up, babe? What's going on? And Yuli basically goes, meh, and keeps looking. I'm like, yeah, don't think that it wasn't just us that caught him barking at Stanek after he got embarrassed because Stanek didn't throw the pitches that he wanted. You know what? Same thing last night. When he did get retired, now all of a sudden he's nodding his head like, yeah. You know why? Because he got retired by a fastball. You know what? No one's trying to be the next freaking check mark on your stat sheet. They're trying to get you out. And when they do, tip your cap. Don't sit there and think that you're the cocky. Set your records. Do your things. Look, and I told you before the series, he's the guy that scared me the most on the White Sox.
He's a good player.
He could do so much damage in so many ways. But the last thing I expected was he was going to be a guy that was going to get into starting all this, especially when it was on a play where he didn't do well.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Eric texting in, why was Anderson mad about the sliders? I saw it and didn't understand it. Anderson was calling Ryan Stanek a P-word that rhymes with wussy after he threw three straight sliders.
And he also called it weak-ass stuff.
S-word at the very end. And the reason that Anderson said that is because he's upset that Stanek didn't challenge him with a fastball. A lot of times hitters call pitchers soft or wusses or whatever because they go breaking ball, instead of challenging him with a fastball. So that's why he called him a wuss. Not that Stanek did anything wrong, just Anderson being Tim Anderson. He has a reputation for this. Just YouTube it. Just Google it. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, this David Culley lovability, his game management, we got to dive into it next. The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about this program called Cars for Kids. Look, it's a great program because it benefits kids in Houston getting a second chance to get their degree. But more so for you, sometimes it's centered around your needs, what you want, what helps you the most. And maybe you got a vehicle laying around collecting rust and dust. Maybe it's not even working anymore and it's an eyesore, but you don't want to pay someone to tow it away because that's more money out of your pocket. Now you don't have to. All you got to do is go to carsforkids.org or call 713-225-4226. They'll come to you. They'll tow it away for free. They'll also make sure that you get a tax write-off. You mentioned ESPN 97.5. You get a $50 gift card. So you're completely benefiting from this. It's not costing you a single thing. And that's where the program really begins. Because once they tow away your boat, your car, your SUV, your truck, your trailer, your motorcycle, whatever it is, even if you can't find the title, they'll track down the title. They'll turn it into resources so that the kids trying to get their education are going to have things that otherwise would be a distraction provided for them. Bus fare, book money, you name it, they can get it so that they can focus on their books and get their degree. It's all done here in the city of Houston, too. Everything works through the Houston Can Academies, and all the kids are local kids. So it's helping benefit kids in Houston make something of their lives, and it starts with your donation. If you got something laying around, you've been wanting to get rid of it, and now you think you might want to donate, all you got to do, carsforkids.org, 713-225-4226, right off the car, not the kid.
Well, hello. To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
You want some breaking Texans news?
Oh, can't wait.
Laremy Tunsil has suffered a torn UCL in his thumb. He'll need surgery eventually. I had the same injury, actually. I've had every injury in the book, it seems like. However, the hope is that Tunsil can...
That thing got... Well, let me guess.
You're not going to say P word that rhymes with wussy, are you?
No, I was going to say caught with your thumb up your ass and it did some damage.
Why would I be caught doing that?
It's an expression.
I know it is, but think about things you say before you say them.
No, because sometimes, you know, exactly. Like Davis Mills is never going to start a game in the NFL.
Why would that be something that comes out of your mouth? Why would you ever say that
phrase?
Because
it's easy when you make predictions sometimes, and it's fun for the show.
Laremy Tunsil, torn UCL. He'll need surgery eventually. However, the hope is that Tunsil can put off surgery until after the season and play through it. It may be challenging, but that is his hope.
He's a warrior.
No, man. Have the surgery tomorrow.
He's a warrior. He's got to protect your franchise quarterback.
You're 1-4, bro. Like, you don't need to wait to have surgery.
I think Laramie's
have it right now.
Got caught with his thumb up his ass a few times. I think I hear what you're saying, but this is why we go back to embrace the suck. This is why when everybody
sit
had
it
those,
out, get better.
Everybody had the false expectations after winning the first week. And when reality sat in, we're sitting exactly where you and I were before the season even started.
But
and it's not a bad thing.
But if you had Tyrod Taylor.
See, don't start all that. Because it's just going to regurgitate all these fans. Go, see, Jeremy's on board with me. He gets it. That's what we're talking about. No, the roster, Casario's comments, every chance you get to get worse for this season, it is the best thing for this franchise. I know it's hard to swallow for a year because you constantly want during football season in a football state to have the NFL team here be in contention for a playoff spot. It ain't happening. The roster's not good enough. The people maybe making the decisions aren't good enough yet. Casario might get there. The rest of them, I don't know. The coaching staff, we haven't even got that. Oh, my God. I mean, it's not Bill O'Brien-esque, but I'm starting to lean your direction. Every week it's getting more and more like, Dave, you're not – so good.
He's overwhelmed. He's overwhelmed in this job. And I don't think it's the reason that he hasn't been a head coach for so long, but it is his first head coaching job. It's his first year as a head coach. And we're seeing situations where he's just – it's been awful. It's been mind-blowing. It's been Bill O'Brien-esque like yesterday. The Texans are up 22-9, 10:20 left to go in the third quarter, fourth and whatever. Like, it's a punt situation. You're on the negative side of the field, Patriot, in your own territory. And the Texans decided to do, like, they were going to fake it.
But did they?
They were going to fake it.
Did they, though?
They didn't fake it. No. Cameron Johnson saw something in the defense where he ran back and was going to try to do a quick kick.
They weren't 100% committed to it.
But why are you even thinking about going forward in that
spot? That's what I'm
saying,
too. If you're going to do something like that, you have to be 100% all in on it. The fact that even Cully's postgame conversations about it were, well, we thought we saw something we liked to go for a fake. But at the end, it didn't happen the way we thought it was, so we tried to pull out of it so we could still punt it. Because nothing says success other than sitting there going, hey, well, mid-play, leave it to your punter to make a good decision on the fly.
I think that's more normal than you think. Like, you send in the fake punt, and then you tell your punter if they don't give you the look that you want, then call it off.
If you're the Rams punter who consistently can throw and run right. And make smart calls, it's one thing. If you're the Houston Texans with a first-year
you're up 13.
Punter.
You're up 13 in the third.
Yeah.
You've only given up 9 points defensively. Like, the idea where you're even thinking about a fake punt in that spot is flat out stupid.
Yep.
Cameron Johnson saw something in the defense, called it off. He went back, didn't get far back enough to punt it. Punted it into the ear hole of his own teammate. And here was David Culley talking after the game about what went wrong.
That was a possibility that if we gave us the right look when we did what we did there, that if they gave us the right look, we were possibly going to fake it. They didn't give us the look, so we were going to back out and then just re-punt. And, you know, it didn't work out. We ended up having a leakage up the middle and ended up getting blocked.
Leakage up the middle. I don't know if I love that phrase either.
Charlie had the best line of all on that one when he said, leakage up the middle is something you also get when you wet an adult diaper. Like, it sounded like he wet his diaper. It sounded like you would have been better suited to appease everyone if you just said, yeah, that's on us. We screwed that up. Completely screwed it up.
Makes no sense to even be considering the fake punt there, and then you botch it on top of it. The execution's poor. That was the turning point of the game. New England outscores the Texans 16-0 after that point, win it 25-22. Another questionable decision by David Culley. You have it 4th and 4th, the New England 38. You're up by 7 points. This is late in the third quarter, and you decide to try a 55-yard field goal with Kaimi Fairbairn, who has missed two extra points, who has kicked a kickoff out of bounds. Like, what you saw in Kyahmi Fairbairn in the game yesterday that inspires the confidence for him to try a 55-yarder, what is going through the mind of David Culling in that spot?
No, that's the exact thing that you have to ask, the same way you had to ask and didn't get the answer you wanted when you thought about asking him about why he went for the fake punt. But when you look at it, and I was tweeting early in the game going, okay, so you got your kicker back. You got one of the six highest paid kickers in the game back, and we're right back to Kyahmi Fairbairn on a Bill O'Brien contract. And I said, thanks, Bill. You got a guy that not only can't make extra points, plural, but you can't make field goals, but yet you feel confident that the thing to do would be to have him kick, you know, normally inside of 40 yards, that's when you say the Mason Crosby type thing. Like, Mason Crosby had 26 or 27 in a row before he had the day he had yesterday. So you see there's a reason why the team would support him. Kyahmi Fairbairn, we've known to know he's not consistent. The one thing he is inconsistent, from his extra points to his field goals. And the last thing in terms of percentage of make rate, anything over 50 is a crapshoot, indoors or outdoors. It doesn't matter. And the best thing to do in my mind, because everybody said he should have gone for it. No, the best thing to do would have been to pin them back, try and take that punter that when he at least punts the ball regularly and doesn't have a fake on his mind, can have a pretty good success rate inside the 20, make them go 80, 90 yards. Stick them way back and then see what they can do in your building. But don't give them a short field after another miss by a bad kicker.
Culley earlier this year was in a 4th-and-4 situation at the Carolina 39, and he decided to punt. This time he kicks the field goal of the guy who's had a bad game. Three things you do there: go for it, punt, kick a field goal. I'm punting first and foremost because the defense is playing pretty well and you're up 7 points late in the third. Get, you know, play the field position game. I can understand the idea of going for it. I don't love it. I'd rather punt. The field goal to me was just was another questionable decision that David Culley explained afterwards.
The decision there was the fact that we felt like we was in his range. He's our kicker. Got the utmost confidence in it. He had a tough day up to that point, but he had made one. And we felt like if we made that field goal there, it's a 2-score ball game. That's why I made the decision.
The utmost confidence in a guy who's missed 2 extra points and has kicked the football out of bounds on a kickoff. I don't understand the decision there for Culley. This is the same guy that theoretically punted on a 3rd-and-10. He's been in other situations where he does 2 totally different things. Same exact spot here in New England whenever you've played Carolina. You kick a field goal once, you punt the other time. How about the way that he handled the last 2 minutes? He accepted a penalty that would have let the Patriots score if he declined it. Now at least your offense is out on the field, right, and you have a fighting chance in the game. Instead, he takes the penalty. The Pats go on to eventually have the drive. They didn't let the Patriots get into the end zone late. That, again, would have given your team the football back, and you have a fighting chance. I'm just watching David Culley's game management. I'm saying this guy is overwhelmed and not qualified for the position, at least game management. Because I think he is a leader. I think he gets the most out of his guys. I think outside of the 60 minutes of a game, he does a pretty good job. From kickoff to the final horn, this dude's not been good.
Let me ask you a question on that. Do you think that quietly somewhere in his office, when you can get Jack Easterby away from you, Nick Caserio has a big grin on his face going, I got my guy. I got the guy that I needed because I need him to do exactly Caserio? What he's doing. Yeah, Casario's going, I got the guy in Culley because you know what? He's a guy that's hard to hate on. Bill O'Brien, it was easy. We nitpicked every single bad decision he made because you wanted him to fail, because you wanted him to pay a little bit back for all the hell he unleashed on fans and media and coaches and players. But with David Culley, he's such a rah-rah guy, such a good old boy that everybody loves to listen to because they think he's just a good person, that I think Caserio sits back and goes, just as I told you why wins and losses don't matter this year, it's part of the process of getting better and building the right system and all that other thing. I think he's sitting back smiling going, I got the right guy.
I think the right guy for what the Texans will be for the next 3 years.
Bridge.
The bridge, which, I mean, I get. And maybe it's lack of game management. It actually helps in this philosophy of embrace the suck, because I don't know if David Culley's cost them a game outright just yet. I think he gives them lesser a chance to win over a qualified game manager. And then 3 other things that he did yesterday in the game that maybe I'm nitpicking too much on, but on 3 different occasions, and the missed field goal was one of them, they take a timeout in a 4th-and-5 or less situation before even trying a hard count. Like, so it's clear that David Culley's not really prepared in that situation. He's not really thinking ahead of what that situation's going to look like. Because if you're taking a timeout ahead of a fourth and five or less without even getting to the line and trying a hard count, that's showing to me that you're not prepared for that spot. That should be automatic. Okay, we're going to take a timeout here, 25 seconds left on the play clock. Hey, Davis Mills, go up to the line, try to get them to bite. This is our offside play. Do not snap it. And then we're going to take the timeout once the play clock gets down to one or two. They're not prepared.
No, they're not. And this is the thing that really, where it really stuck in my head was last night during the weather delay, they interviewed Tony Dungy. And Tony Dungy said that Dennis Green was such a stickler as a head coach. He practiced for weather delays and for things, right? That's why a head coach is what he is. That's why he's a CEO. He doesn't have to worry about the every given play on offense and defense. What he has to really worry about are the intangibles, the other things, the time management, the challenge, and the system that's put in place so that you know whether you should challenge or not, the ability to adapt to situations like the fake punt or like certain things that come your way and go, this, if we're going to do it, we need to do this, this, and this, and we need to practice it, or we're not going to do it. Not go out there and half-ass it and leave it in the hands of the punter and a quick decision on the fly once the personnel's already on the field and going, you know what, do this, but now change it and do that and do it well and execute it when it looks like they never even practiced it.
713-780-3776. Texter saying they should cut Kyahmi Fairbairn right now. The problem with that is that Bill O'Brien gave him this absurd deal that it cost more cutting Kyahmi Fairbairn than it does just keeping him. He's got a 5.7 dead cap. He's got a 4.2 cap hit, so it's actually cheaper if you just keep him. I think that he's probably not the kicker going forward after this season, but it would be pricey if you cut him. And again, like a 1-4 team, like, do you want to spend money and actually cost your money by keeping a kicker who was missing kicks and, again, embracing the suck?
Also a method, right? The same way you said about Tunsil, he's saying to you quietly without the media being around, it's exactly I want Kyahmi Fairbairn to be my kicker. Because you know what? We could be in a game against the Patriots.
We can rely on him to miss.
If he shanks a few extra points and a field goal here or there, could be the difference between winning and losing. And right now, we want to embrace the suck.
I mean, maybe Culley and Caserio are playing chess, and that's all part of the plan. Like, we're going to do the suboptimal thing. We're going to kick field goals when we should punt. We're going to punt when we should kick field goals. It's all this backwards game we're playing as we try to go 1-16 and log down a top three pick in the upcoming NFL draft. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. So Kyrie playing half the games. Ben Simmons back to Philly. We'll go around the NFL when we return. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame it, Don.
Kane is in the building.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
All right, Kyrie Irving's only going to play in half of the games this season. The New York City law is still that you can't play if you don't have the vaccination. Kyrie Irving asking you to respect his privacy clearly doesn't have it. Steve Nash addressing this yesterday, saying they expect to be without Kyrie Irving at home games. Interesting, though, still going to be eligible to play in road games. How is he going to get there? How is the chemistry going to be? This is really a bizarre situation.
It really is, because over the weekend, if you missed it, the city declared the practice facility for the Nets to be a private facility, therefore allowing him to practice. But because the Barclays Center is public and there's no way you can change that, he's not going to be able to play in the home games. But you can tell that there's already pandering trying to help out Kyrie. Kyrie should be helping out his teammates. This is one where I went back to the conversations you and I had when this first started to bubble up to the surface in terms of what Kyrie might be thinking and what he's going to try and pull. All you're doing is making this about you yet again, Kyrie. You're crapping on your teammates. You're basically saying, you know what, deal with it. I'm not going to be around for half the games, but treat me like a full share. Treat me like a full big three member. Treat me like the guy, you know, one of the main guys that needs to be in all the advertising and all the team meetings and everything, recognized as the man or one of the guys. If I'm the team, I'm sick of it. I got to believe if I'm Steve Nash, and even particularly more so, Sean Marks, the GM, I got to be saying to myself, God, if I could just get this guy out of my hair. I've got too good of a roster, too good of a team. I saw some trade scenarios out there, again, where whether he likes it or not, if they could move him, I really firmly believe that they would move him.
The problem is if you trade Kyrie Irving whenever, like, his stock is down right now. And I'm not a big fan of trading players when the stock is down. And the reason his stock is down is because of what's going on right now.
It has nothing to do with
his
basketball ability.
No, I know that. But if you're a team that's trading for Kyrie Irving, you're not going to give full value.
It depends. It depends on if you're in a situation where it's not about the level of play. It's about needing to make a change. If you're Portland and you know we are what we are, we've got two all-stars in the backcourt. We've got Dame, and we've got the next best thing to Dame, which is CJ McCollum. But if all these years of trying to get those two guys to make it work together, we're in a rut. This is as far we're going to go. And I can dangle McCollum to try and get a small forward that can score or to try and get someone that helps me. Then I get them involved. I get a couple other teams involved, like a Sacramento, who's got to get better. And they've got a bunch of young talent. So maybe, you know, I don't think it's Kyrie ending up in Portland. But even if you send him to Sacramento, I don't care. If De'Aaron Fox ends up going to be the guy for the Nets and he's the point guard, that's perfect for them. Because
I wouldn't do that if I'm Sacramento, though. Because now you're getting a problem who's older as opposed to being a younger team.
Doesn't mean you
got to
keep him either. You can still try and move him on again. But you know what? You've already got Halliburton. You've got some young players that have shown that you've got multiple players to play the same position in Sacramento. You're not going to be left holding the bag. Plus, you get an all-world point guard with the best handles in the league in Kyrie that other teams are going to want. That you could try and repackage if you wanted to or had to. But there are ways to make a deal happen. It's just that Kyrie's not going to be all for it because it's not going to his master plan. Tough. Guess what? You know what? Our master plan involved you playing every game home and road unless you got hurt. And for the second straight year, you've got other ulterior motives and outside distractions that are going to be the reason why you're not going to do that.
The other biggest storyline in the NBA is Ben Simmons. He's wanted out of Philly. Philly's been trying to trade him. Daryl Morey still has him in very high regard, at least when it comes to trade value around the league. Philly has not been able to find a suitor for him. And now Woj is reporting that it looks like discussions gaining momentum that Ben Simmons is going to return to Philadelphia, perhaps even as early as this week.
I just don't know how that happens because of the fact that his value is at an all-time low. The only way it gets any better, and again, another guy that alienated his teammates, but he alienated the organization. Was it deserved? That depends on what side of this equation you're on. But this was a divorce made for this season. It had to happen because of the way it ended last season. So the fact that you're suddenly going to put a Band-Aid on it and try and make it better. Daryl, I think, talking out of both sides of his mouth, saying he wants him back. The worst thing for Daryl is, after all this social media that we saw of him improving his shot and, you know, really taking it to the guys at the 24-hour fitness, if he comes in and he's still got apprehension in his jumper and he's still not willing to take or make shots and he can't make shots for the Sixers, no matter how many first-round draft picks Daryl says he's worth, the value goes down and it goes down quickly and it puts the Sixers, who have to win immediately, in a tougher situation because now you're going to get less when you try and move him. But now you absolutely have to move him.
Yeah, like you said, though, his value right now and his stock is so low. And Daryl Morey, rightfully so, still wants quite a bit for a number one pick. I don't think it's realistic what he wants, and that's why he hasn't been traded. But it looks like a situation where they have no other choice because Morey isn't going to want to accept the packages he's being offered from other teams in the NBA. Ben Simmons is going to want to get paid. He's going to want to play basketball. So it looks like both of them have realized that it's inevitable that they'll have to at least start the season together with Ben Simmons reporting this week, it looks like, according to Woj. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776.
By the way, Rockets play tonight in
Toronto. They do, Raptors.
I don't know that anybody's paying attention. It's like I saw red, rowdy, Kool-Aid drinking Rockets fans the other night wanting to make sure that everybody knew they played the Heat.
Uh-huh.
There's baseball going on.
Which,
there's Thursday
night
football going on. Slow your roll.
The Rockets hosted the Heat the other night at 9 p.m.
Yeah, to accommodate ESPN.
That's ridiculous that they were there so late. I couldn't believe that.
I still am amazed, by the way, because I keep telling you, I'm more passionate for this season about the evolution of Porter Jr. I cannot believe he's still not getting any love. It's all Jalen Green all the time. I think Porter for this coming season is going to be their best player.
How do you quantify that? Just what your eyes see?
Yeah, what I've seen at the end of last season, including a 50-point game, which I don't care who you are. In the NBA, if you get 50 in a game, you have ability, right? He's matured. He understands with all the big names out of the way, including John Wall, that there's a path cleared for him so he doesn't have to worry about playing time and getting minutes. In the offseason, he worked on his game nonstop. He went out to Seattle in one of the tougher leagues for pro players and dominated and impressed the hell out of people, including NBA types. And I think that it's almost been a blessing to this point that all of the distraction has been the second overall pick is Jalen Green. But when the game really counts, I think it's going to be something that you have to keep an eye on, that as much as everybody's watching Green and can he be Rookie of the Year, I really believe Porter Jr. for this season is going to be the best player on the team.
Yeah, I think that the Rockets season is going to be fun to watch. Looking forward to the regular season, postseason, not so much. Corey Brewer got waived, I suppose.
No, he didn't. Dell's being funny, and he actually makes a valid point. Because I said anybody that can get 50 in the league shows that they have ability.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Corey Brewer 50. Once had a 50-piece against the Rockets.
I thought he was out of the league. What am I talking about?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I don't think that I put the two of them in the same category, Dell. But I think that, you know what? Everybody has their day. Corey Brewer was made to look like a hero by your Houston Rockets.
Always like Corey Brewer.
Great dude. Absolutely all-world great dude. He has been on the air with us multiple times from Super Bowl Radio Row to he stayed down the street. He was like, anytime you guys need me, I'm always there for you. Couldn't be a nicer guy. It's not his fault that his jump shot was kind of hit or miss, and he missed a lot.
I thought he was still bouncing around the league. Apparently he's a coach somewhere.
He's a player development coach, I believe, in New Orleans.
That's good.
I believe that's right.
He's made so much money, I'm surprised that he still wants to stick around.
Yeah, and he still plays in the Fondy Summer League, so that's how he stays fresh.
How is the game in the Fondy Summer League these days?
I haven't seen it.
It used to be legendary.
Since the pandemic. We broadcasted live from there a couple years
really?
Ago. Yeah, and Daniel House and a lot of the Houston guys were still playing in it, and there was some good matchups, and there was a lot of NBA talent still in the building playing basketball. But, you know, it's not anywhere near the legendary status that it once carried every time you heard the Fondy League was getting started up. But it still carries some weight.
All right, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Astros are rained out today. Is that good news or bad news? We discuss it next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your home for sports. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep their trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. Once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.